Hey, before we get started, I wanted to let you know that we love bringing this content to you for free, and we want to keep going. Your support helps make that happen. So please go hit that subscribe button today. It really makes a difference. Okay, on to the episode. You think that when you follow your dreams, everything will work out. Unfortunately, that's not the case for everyone. Take, for example, Dr. Quan Stewart.
I had never been a shelter vet before. I took on this work as a challenge. Dreaming of being a veterinarian since I was 7, I wanted to practice on the beach by San Diego, and all that was living out just fine. And then out of nowhere, I decided to take this job as a shelter vet. About 3 years into it, I was getting depressed, despondent.
The work was hard, and the amount of animals Dr. Quan couldn't help was taking its toll. It got to the point where he contemplated quitting being a vet altogether. But then something happened one day when he was walking into a 7-Eleven.
There was this unhoused man sitting outside, tucked away in the corner, as you sometimes see them. I was walking out. I had probably seen this gentleman 5-6 times before, but on this day, I noticed he had a dog. And out of the corner of my eye, and you do this long enough, you can diagnose things from across the freeway. I noticed his dog had some awful skin condition, and it looked like it was just a really bad flea allergy. So I stepped over, introduced myself. I'm Quan Stewart. I'm a veterinarian. I see your dog has some sort of skin issue, rash, and it looks like it's probably caused by fleas. And the poor guy was just exasperated. He said, I don't know what it is, but she's not sleeping. She's miserable. I'm miserable. I don't know what to do. I don't have the money to care for her. And I said, well, if you're here tomorrow, I'll stop by with something that I think might help. And I did. It was $3 out of my pocket and 5 minutes of my time.
That tiny investment turned that dog's life around. But it was more than that.
I ended up seeing the same dog 10 days later, and she was transformed. The hair was coming back. She was happy and wagging her tail. I could almost see the smile on her that wasn't present before. And the man sitting in the same spot was looking up at me. And with tears in his eyes, he just said, thank you for not ignoring me. And he looked down and he looked up at me again and repeated the same thing. And that was the kickoff moment for me. I not only did not quit the profession, in that moment I said, I'm going to get back to doing what I want to do. Saving animals, and I'm going to do it for passion, not for pay. And that was about 12 years ago, and I haven't stopped walking the streets since.
Coming up after the break, I talked to Dr. Quan more about what came next and how he founded Project Street Vet, which provides free veterinary care, treatment, and support to the pets of individuals experiencing homelessness. Plus, he lets us know how we can all get involved and help animals in need. Stay with us. This podcast wouldn't be possible without the Buddies app. I use the app with my dog, Ozzy, and our family cat, Ripper. It's been a great tool in my pet parenting journey. One of my favorite features of the app is the Learn articles, where I always find great advice and resources to help keep Ozzy living his best life. But there are so many other features as well. On Buddies, you can track your pet's health, engage directly with the growing Buddies community, get the latest wellness advice from proven pet experts, and even shop for Blue Buffalo products. And when you use the app or make Blue purchases, you earn points to use towards rewards like treats and swag. Buddies is your trusted partner in pet parenthood, and using this free app is the perfect way to help build a strong bond with your four-legged family member. Download it now on iOS or Android, or by visiting lifewithpetspodcast.com. And keep looking out for ways to engage with me and Life with Pets using the app's Connect feature. Welcome to Life with Pets. I'm so excited to talk to you today.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
That is an incredible story. And thank you for sharing that story with us. Very, very touching, moving story. And I want to know what happened next. So what was the next step?
I wasn't sure what the next step was. People asked me, so what was the vision when you started treating pets with the unhoused? There was no vision. I think I was in survival mode. That spontaneous, unexpected moment. You know, if I look back and you believe it all in destiny or you have a calling of some kind, that must have been that moment, because just minutes prior to that, I felt lost.
Yeah.
I felt confused and defeated. I was questioning my choice of career, which, you know, again, if you know what it takes to become a veterinarian, and it's a life journey. I mean, I wanted to be a veterinarian since I was 7. To question all that, there was no plan. I helped that guy and his dog, honestly, probably helped me more than it did them. And I just said, I'm gonna do more of this. It was shortly after that that I hosted a clinic, a pop-up clinic. Again, didn't know what I was doing. I just set up a table and a tarp. It was next to a like a food bank, a food kitchen. And anybody standing in line, I just sort of walked down the line. Anybody having a, holding a pet or with a pet next to them, I just said, I have a little clinic over here. And if you want to step over after you eat, I'll take a look at your pet at no cost. Mm-hmm. And before I knew it, I had a little line of customers. It was basic stuff. It's preventative care. It's vaccines. It's flea treatment. It's nail trimming. But it's also, you know, an examination and something a lot of these pets haven't had before. Right. And what I've learned is when it comes to parenting a pet, owning a pet, having a pet in your life, and you see it as a companion, as a family member, as a friend, yes, you want to know what's wrong with them. But what I've noticed with these folks on the streets, they also love hearing what they're doing right.
Yeah.
They love feeling validated because I'm sure so often they hear, why do you have a pet when you can barely mm-hmm. care for yourself? And right. why did you take on this responsibility? And poor pet. I don't see it that way. We get to that in a second. But in that moment, as I'm doing the exam, I like to tell them, you know, the weight is great. The nice, mm-hmm. healthy weight and ears look good. And I can tell he's getting lots of exercise. And they just light up because they, you know, I know this pet in so many cases means the world to them. It's a lifeline. Mm-hmm. And then to have them hear from a professional, you're doing a lot of things right by this creature. Good job. That is very warming to them. I did the clinic, great. But what I heard from the line of people more than once was, hey, I didn't know this was happening. I have a friend who lives under a bridge or someone, you know, this part of town who doesn't have access. Would you mind going to them? And I just thought, yeah, why can't I? So I started packing a bag and I started walking.
And so did you wind up quitting the shelter vet job to do this at some point? Like, what was that? Like, how much time were you dedicating to helping pets of the unhoused versus the job that was slowly, you know, making you depressed and all that?
I was at the time roughly 3 years in to my post at the mm-hmm. county shelter. I had thought about leaving more than once. I mean, there came a time where it was almost every day I was questioning myself. But there was something about that moment. And another really quick story I can tell in 30 seconds, which also lit another fire, is when I saved this little kitten that was on the verge of being euthanized. And on this day, I came across this cage, this little tiny kitten. She could fit in the palm of my hand. And her eyes crusted shut. She was starved. I immediately gave the order to euthanize her. And then I had a second thought for whatever reason. I know taking her home and nursing her, something I told myself I just wasn't going to do. You have to have some kind of separation between this right. life and the shelter. And I brought her home and nursed her back to health. And on the day I was supposed to take her back, my son started crying. I said, no. And I started getting a little emotional. I said, all right, fine, we'll keep her. But really, I was inside, I was happy we kept her. And she turned this kitten reminded me that whether they end up as a euthanasia or not, they deserve the care, attention, and love while they are with us. And that, along with the work in the streets, turned my attitude around. And I said, I'm gonna help turn the shelter. I'm gonna change the trajectory of the shelter. Within my last 2 years there, I was five years total. We built a brand new state-of-the-art shelter. We cut our euthanasia rate in half, and we almost doubled our adoption rate.
Wow.
So those last 2 years were critical and enlightening in a lot of ways, and probably the best years of my career. Though they were tough, they taught me a lot, and, you know, resilience and grace and so forth.
That's amazing that you were able to make that turnaround at the shelter and to bring more animals into the lives and homes of people who, like you said, they become family, they become a lifeline for people. And that kind of shifts us to where I wanted to go, which is you hear a lot of judgment about people experiencing homelessness and whether they have pets or not, and should they have pets or not, all that kind of stuff. And I want to talk about how you see that situation. Obviously, people experiencing homelessness have issues. They have their problems. There's reasons that they're experiencing homelessness. But I think a pet, like you said, provides them something to live for, provides them that lifeline. So I'd like to get your opinion, your take on what you say to people who judge that situation.
I think of myself prior to doing the work. Mm-hmm. And the prejudgments, the assumptions that I would make. And I find myself now just talking to that person and what I would say, because there was a time, regrettably, where, yes, I would see, for example, an able-bodied man on a street corner, panhandling, shaking a can. And my first thought was, just go get a job, man. What's stopping you from working and pulling yourself out of your situation? Or I had this thought before also, I'd see someone with a pet and say the same thing. Why, and this is back in my sort of idealistic, you need to be in the perfect situation to own a pet. Mm-hmm. I've completely walked that back. And it's these people that have taught me that, because what I have seen on the streets is these people give so much love, commitment, devotion, and time to their pets, more than we give, I believe, more than, I'll just speak for myself, more than I give on a daily basis, because I run off to work 8-10 hours a day. And I'm sorry if you can hear my dogs in the background. Those are them.
We always enjoy a pet interruption on this show. Always welcome
back
here.
I can see that they're tearing something up. A hole I have to fill later. But I go to work and, my dogs, they pine for me. They sit here, they're listening for the garage door to open or the click of the front door or the keys, and they get excited and they live for us. They really do. Anyone who's owned a pet knows that. They don't care about how much square footage you have in your home, how nice your furniture is, what you drive. And I think sometimes people who have means, great means, they hold themselves above others, even when it comes to owning a pet, because they seem to have a lot. But again, that's not what the pet cares about. They want you. They want you. And these people are with their pet companion mm-hmm. every hour of every day. And how many of us can say that, right? How many of us can say we would give up one of our meals to feed our pets? How many of us can say we would turn down temporary housing, right? A comfortable, warm bed to sleep in if they're refusing to take our pet with us.
Right.
I think you start to dwindle that number down quite a bit. And so there is your answer. And it took me a journey, yes, to understand that and to know that if anyone really deserves or needs a pet in a moment, it's these people. Because when do our pets help us the most? It's sometimes in those moments of crisis, right? Where we're depressed, we're battling disease, we've lost a loved one. And your pet's head on your lap or sitting next to you can do wonders for you. And these people they're in their own state of crisis, and these pets keep them grounded. They keep them hopeful, pushing forward. And again, that is, you just can't say that about everybody's relationship with their pet.
Yeah, 100%. And yeah, I've shared this story before. My dog, I got him at the lowest point in my life, and he helped me. He wasn't the reason that I was able to overcome and get healthy and all that stuff, but he gave me a reason every day to get up and to do something and to help myself. So of course, 100%, like if you have a pet, you have another reason to live, to keep going.
Well, in some cases they don't have any reasons except their pet. Right. It's not another reason. Sometimes that pet is the only reason. Mm-hmm. I had a lady tell me the coolest thing not that long ago, and I ended up posting it on Instagram, but she'd been homeless now about 2 years, and she had this cute little white pit bull, beautiful pit bull, so friendly. And I said, one thing I do, I'll tell you guys, just as a joke, when I get playful with these people, we get to know each other, and this trusting door sort of opens. And one thing I sometimes say, just to see what reaction I'll get, is I'll ask them, what do I need to do to take them off your hands? Like, let me go and just take them off your hands for you. And I just want, I like to see their reaction, because and those are fighting words for a lot of them.
Right.
But then I asked her, what does she mean to you? And she says, she's my daily inspiration. My daily inspiration to get up off this corner and get her a yard. She says, I'm going to improve my situation because she deserves a yard. And I'm going to get my act together, and I'm going to keep pushing and keep trying until I get that yard. And I loved hearing that.
That's amazing. Now, when you're working with these people, with these animals, what are some of the things that you're seeing? What are some of the common ailments, treatments that these animals need? How are you providing services in a way that is repeatable on a daily basis? Because, you know, you can't be bringing all of these animals like into surgery every day, like some if they have, you know, cancers or things like that. But what are some of the things that you're helping treat?
Well, I'll tell you guys this. I basically just carry a bag. For years, it was like a Coleman bag that you unzip because it kept the vaccines cool and I could pack it. It was just something that I could throw over my shoulder. I now carry a backpack that's a little bit bigger. But in that bag, I can treat 80%, approximately 80% of the things I see on the streets. It's a bag that's just filled with a foundation of common things that can address a number of ailments. So it's, again, it's preventative care. So it's vaccines, it's flea and tick, it's heartworm. And then allergies are very common in California, especially Southern mm-hmm. California. Ear infections are common. So things to address allergies, infection, ear cleaning, antibiotics, anti-inflammatories for dogs who are in pain or maybe developing some arthritis, something to trim nails, some bandaging material. That is the gist of the kit. And again, with that small bag, with my stethoscope and otoscope, I can give a full examination and then treat most things. Those other 15 to 20% that may need more, as you say, may need mm-hmm. to go into a hospital, then I arrange that. So I will refer yeah. them to a nearby hospital should they need a dental cleaning with extractions, an anesthetic procedure, should they need a tumor removed. I've seen dogs, I just happened upon them, they were recently hit by a car, they needed to get in for life-saving treatment, we get them in for that as well. So most of it I can handle just myself on a street corner, down an alley, next to a street lamp, whatever, that becomes my office suddenly. But for everything else, now that the charity is well-funded, and we're so fortunate to be able to say that, I don't have to turn anybody down. I can get them in.
Yeah.
One question I'll answer for it, which I usually get asked is, how do you pay for it? And I'll tell you, for those first 6 or 7 years that preceded that moment outside 7-Eleven, I just did it out of my own pocket. I just set aside a portion of my salary that I was comfortable without, and I committed it to doing this work. The problem is I did more and more of it, or as I got more and more referrals, or I'd start to now know these same pets and see them year after year, and they were getting up there in years and required other things. It just got expensive. And I found myself having to say no or turn people down or begging my colleagues, can you do this pro bono? And it was tough. So, and during the 6 years, Hillary, I didn't tell anybody about the work.
Ask you about that because I had heard you had kept it a secret. Yeah.
It was a secret. And I don't know why I kept it a secret. As I said, I think that first moment was more important for me than it was that animal. Selfishly, I think I just had this healing moment and I wanted to just keep doing the work, but I didn't want to get judged myself, I guess. I didn't want to get questions. I didn't want to be at a dinner party and have someone ask, well, you know, why do you do that? Why are you giving your time and money to these people when they shouldn't have a pet? I didn't want to hear anything negative. I just want to go out and do it. It was my own little secret crusade. I didn't tell my own family. And
wow.
I just put my head down and did the work, and it saved me. It came a point where I needed to get the word out, because if I wanted to keep doing it and keep helping as many people as I could, I did need resources. So we took the mission official and created the charity Projects Revet a few years ago. And now the Americans are generous, especially when it comes to pets. We are so well funded and I never have to turn a pet away.
And what was the reaction when you did start telling people, when you told your family, when you told your friends, when you made it public?
Well, I have one younger brother. We're close. In fact, he helps me run the charity together. It's like his full-time job. And he's like, why would you keep that from me? He's like, I thought we were tight. Why would you not tell me about that? And I sort of gave him the same answer I just gave you. I didn't really have the best answer. But and the same with friends and others and family. And it didn't really come as much of a surprise to our mother and father, because we were taught to give back. I mean, that's the way we were raised, is that we have an obligation to society, to our fellow man, to give back beyond our job, right? To mm-hmm. find a way to use our talents or skills to give back to humanity. And it took me a while, but I found it. And once we got out on social media, then, you know, there was just this really warm, wonderful reaction and donations started pouring in.
That's amazing. And now I think you do free clinics. You help pet parents of all kinds. So what goes into these clinics and who's showing up? What are they learning? How are you helping everybody who's coming to these clinics?
What we'll do now is sort of advertise through a city agency or a food bank that will be here at this time. And the idea is to get as many people as we can so we can see as many pets and help as many pets as we can in that 2 or 3 hour window. And yeah, the response is great. The people are just so grateful, as you can imagine. And the whole team walks away with that same feeling I had that afternoon, that morning outside 7-Eleven. It's almost indescribable, but you love it and it keeps you coming back. There's this huge probably dopamine release when you do it. And yeah, I love it. The thing is, I still enjoy walking though. I still enjoy just getting out. There's something about the one-on-one experience and surprising someone. I've had moments where I turn a corner into an alley around a dumpster and there's someone living there in their tent with a dog. And right there, it's like a surprise moment. And they're almost wondering, what are you doing here? Who are you? But as soon as I announce myself and get, you know, granted permission to examine their pet, I put the stethoscope in, I get down and I get to work. And as I said, almost immediately this door opens and we start talking like two friends. And I just love that reaction. The reaction I see from people as if I just dropped from the sky, especially in moments when they're desperate for help, right? When their pet is suffering from something and then out of the blue, this guy just shows up with a stethoscope and a bag and he's treating my pet. I mean, there's just something about that.
My dog Teddy is going through something right now. What is it, you ask? It's the True Blue Effect, which is all the benefits your dog could experience from the key ingredients in Blue Life Protection Formula. I'm talking healthy coat, strong bones, muscle development, immune system health, great digestion, strong joints, and lots of energy. Try the Blue Life Protection Formula now and see if your dog benefits from the True Blue Effect. You have to build trust with the people, but you must have to build trust with these pets too. What is that like? Because I feel like a lot of these animals might not immediately be chill with like, oh, who's this random man who's trying to touch me and look in my ears and orifices and things.
That happens. That does. But here's a funny statistic, or at least an anecdotal statistic. I've never been bit in the streets. I've seen now... Wow. I've cataloged hundreds, probably close to thousands of pets I've seen in the street. I've never been bit. That's not the case in clinic. And I think the reason is, So you ask, like, well, you know, you just happen upon someone's doorstep and their pet's there and they're just going to let you examine them. And the answer in most cases is yes, because these animals are so well socialized. I mean, think about it. They're outside in the element. There are cars honking and people walking by and traffic noise. And, you know, there's always some kind of commotion. And they're just very comfortable in this environment. So yes, I'm a stranger, but I feel like as soon as their pet parent acknowledges me and says it's okay, it's fine. It's on. That's not the same in clinic. You want to talk about when I get worried or reticent. It's when I'm about to look in the ears of like a German Shepherd who doesn't like his ears touched. And just because I'm in a clinic and just because he's owned by a traditional owner, people think, oh, it's no. I would much, much rather be in the streets walking up on that strange pit bull that's never seen me before because I've never had a bad interaction.
That's amazing. And it makes a lot of sense because you're right. They're around all different kinds of people all day long in all different kinds of places that they have to adapt to. So that makes sense that they would be much more willing than a traditional pet, I guess, who is used to his or her own environment and don't come near my environment or my people kind of thing.
Or hate the veterinary hospital in general. They already know bad stuff's going to happen.
Yes.
So they're already
not
on
a
high
great
alert
place.
When they come to me and they see the white coat. They're like, all right, here we go. I'm like, all right, here we go.
Now, what's next for Project Street Vet? How are you continuing to grow? What new projects are you looking for? What are you hoping for in the future?
It's been about a year now, but we partnered with Fetch by the Dodo. It's a pet insurance company.
Yep.
And they have provided a lot of visibility to the mission and a lot of resources. And I'm at the point now where I get to sort of dream. And going back to those years where I didn't tell a soul and it was just, I was a one-man band, We're now at the point where I have street vet teams, that's what we call them. I have street vet teams popping up in other cities around the country. I'm on the other coast now. So I have a team in Orlando, one in Atlanta, DC, San Francisco, San Diego, LA, and the mission is growing. And I really never imagined we would be at this point. So now if I can really put something up on the vision board, it is ultimately to have teams, veterinary professionals providing care to these unhoused pets in every major urban center in the country.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredible how much you've grown and to see the different communities that are now being helped and the potential to keep expanding is really exciting to watch and to see where you'll go next. And I want to know how can other people help? How can we be allies? How can we help either you in your mission or just in general in our own communities if we see people experiencing homelessness and they have pets? Like, what are some of the things that we all can do?
You know, people want to support our mission. We love it. I mean, I almost get stuck for words because I will take words of support. We'll take donations, the well wishes, you know, the comments and likes on Instagram. All that fuels the mission. It does. It's, I mean, kindness isn't always wrapped up in dollars. It comes in many forms. And that's really what this mission is about. I mean, sometimes I don't even actually deliver treatment or care to a pet, but I'll just sit there and let this unhoused person be heard and let them be seen. Mm-hmm. And so people can go to our website, projectstreetvet.org, and there's various ways to support the mission. Instagram, we love to tell the stories. So we have what I think are compelling, riveting stories. My brother curates all the content. That's where he comes in. He's an editor. That's his trade. And so he he gives the street vet mission life and the personality. So various ways. But when it comes to, again, helping these folks and their pets be seen, whether it's through us or someone else, I would just say, you know, remember that that's a human being. And I think we sometimes get in our own way sometimes with the judgments. And I can speak for myself again, going back 12 years ago, that keeps us from doing something kind to somebody. And I feel like more than ever that I can remember in my entire life, there is just a lot of intolerance for one another for various things. It's our sexual orientation or our ethnic background or even our political affiliation. And these put up walls that make us see someone through a different lens. And you have to break those down if you want to just see a human who needs help, because a gesture of kindness can change someone's day, but an act of kindness can also change somebody's life. And that's what I'm finding in the work that we do in the streets. So just giving these people a moment sometimes, offering to bring back dog food. Another idea I had was, for those of you that do own pets, talk to your own veterinarian and ask them, would you mind sponsoring somebody from the unhoused community once or twice a month? And that you, person speaking, the mm-hmm. client would be willing to put up some money towards that, right? I think if more veterinarians opened up their clinics to people, these people who, again, need these pets to keep pushing forward in most cases, offered some sort of free treatment every once in a while that didn't zap their business bottom line, I think it could go a long way.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's definitely useful, helpful, practical information that people can put to use right now. And I think after hearing you and hearing and seeing the work that you're doing, it's a no-brainer that this is important and it helps people. So I encourage everybody to check out your website, to check out your Instagram. All right. Before we wrap up, there's one other thing to do. We have one more question for you. Might be the hardest one yet. We'll see. A lot of people struggle with this one. If you could be any animal in the world, what animal would you be? And what would be your favorite activity?
Huh. Well, I've never considered my favorite activity as my favorite animal. That adds a different dimension to it. my favorite animal...
I'm just kidding. I always like to take it one step farther.
Of course you have.
That's
to.
It.
my favorite animal is the cheetah. And so that's what I would select. And there's something very beautiful and majestic about them. I love the fact they're the fastest land animal. I was a track athlete most of my life and through college. So there's just something very cool about that. So I guess my favorite activity would just be like running 65 miles per hour, right? That's how cool would that be?
That'd be pretty cool. Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I love that answer. And I loved this conversation. So thank you for joining us on Life with Pets. And yeah, everybody go check out the organization and learn more.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Life with Pets, the show that combines real pet stories with proven guidance from pet professionals. I'm your host, Hillary Georgie, and I hope this show has been a great resource for you as a pet parent. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe, rate, and review the show on your favorite podcast platform. And don't forget to download the Buddies app. This episode was produced by the team at mission.org.